everyone, and welcome to Marketing and Sales Over Cocktails, the weekly podcast that helps you grow your business, improve your life, and enjoy yourself along the way. I'm your host, Alan Langer, and every week we try to bring you the best thought leaders, the best business leaders, and the best minds out there to help you succeed in business and in life. So sit back, relax, grab your pad, your pen, and your favorite beverage, and enjoy the next episode of Marketing and Sales Over Cocktails. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Marketing and Sales Over Cocktails. This is your host, Alan Langer. Got another great show coming up for you today, but not from the United States. We are going across the pond today to Bath, England, United Kingdom. And we've got Simon Hares joining us in a few minutes. Really looking forward to that, expert sales trainer. But before we get to Simon, just a couple of notes. First, remember we have the Ask Alan segment of the podcast. And to ask me a question, if you send in a question, and the website is marketingandsalespodcast.com, marketingandsalespodcast.com, send me a question through the contact section. If we read your question on the air, you get a free autographed signed copy of my book. So send those questions in. We get a lot of great questions every week. And we've got a good one coming up at the end of this podcast for Simon and myself. So without further ado, and this is episode 27, I believe. Yes, 27. Simon Hares from the United Kingdom. How are you, sir? Good morning or good afternoon to you, right?
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So normally this is cocktails for both of us, but since it's pretty much 9 a.m. on my end, I have my cup of coffee. I don't know what you're joining us with. Do you have water?
Cocktail at lunch.
There you go. Cocktail at lunch.
It looks like water.
Yeah, it looks like it looks like water. So Simon and I got to know, this is how Simon and I met. It was LinkedIn where I meet most of my guests, but he did a great post probably a few months ago now about all the books that he's read, all the sales books he's read. And he put them on this this outside theater setting with stone steps, and he put them out there. And I joked with him. I said, "Where's my book? My book should be on your list." And that's how we started talking. And so turns out that Simon's been in sales for 30 years now. He's an international sales and management trainer. He's worked in media sales for over 20 years, and he's just really a cool guy. He always comes with information. He joined my networking group. Everybody loves him. So Simon, how are you today?
Yeah, all good. Thank you. All good. Those steps that you talk about with those books, that's my garden. And my garden sits in a wood. So we're very lucky that we live in a wood, like yourself, actually. Yeah. and the steps go up through the wood, and I thought it was quite good to represent the steps of the sale.
Yeah.
So all the sales books that were there, not yours, they would be.
My book didn't make the steps.
That's great. that will appear. But it worked out very well, and we did an update as well, mm-hmm. because there's so many that come out, and there are so many great books that are out there. With kindness, there are also a lot of terrible books that are out there. Mm-hmm. And I think I get to read an awful lot of these books that come out, and some of them go pride of place, some of them go from a shoulder and out of the way. But when there's some really relevant stuff that's out there, it needs to be showcased. And, you know, I think on LinkedIn, it's a fantastic platform because most people on LinkedIn are into self-development, I found, especially on my network, and they want to learn new things. And people post a lot about books all the time. So, you know, in this climate, we need to have our skills as sharp as possible because God knows we've got to sell at the speed of change. And a lot of things have changed, including, you know, the time it takes for clients to make a decision, that's sped up, you know, the way that we communicate video, of course, but using video messaging is now so powerful, using Vidyard, which I know you use. And also I've just found another one called Loom.
Yeah, Loom I actually started with, and then I switched over to Vidyard because what I found with Loom, and again, maybe it's changed since I switched, but Loom didn't have, it only showed the link in the email, where Vidyard shows the actual thumbnail of the video. So you know you're looking at a video, where Loom was just showing a link. And again, maybe it's changed, but I didn't like the fact that, you know, a lot of people don't want to click on a link in an email because they're afraid where it's going to take them. So that's why I use Vidyard instead.
I use Vidyard mostly. I just recently found Loom by talking to someone on LinkedIn. But also Bonbon apparently is very, very good.
Yeah, Bonbon. Well. But Bonbon's expensive, though. That's why I don't use them. They're like $60 a month or something like that. For me, that's expensive. So.
Yeah, I suppose for, you know, like for me, that would be quite an outlay. But I've seen what they do. I think it's Stephen Paginelli and Ethan Butte, isn't it, that have that.
Yeah.
Do a terrific job. And their book on video is very, very good. Rehumanize your business using video.
Using video, yes.
But today, I wanted to kind of, I've done a number of podcasts and talked about sales, but one of the areas that I believe has changed immensely is how we present right now. And especially now that we're presenting on screen, it feels traditionally when we're presenting to somebody across a table, that feels slightly different. If we're presenting on stage, well, that's something different. Again, you're a speaker, so you know about speaking on a stage to a group. And as a trainer, I speak to groups as well. But when it comes to actually doing stuff over video, I think that there are some rules of presenting that have become a lot tighter and a lot sharper. And we need to be reminded of those so that when we are presenting to potential clients, that we do get there much quicker in line with the speed at which the client now makes decisions.
I really love when we were doing our pre-call and you mentioned that you wanted to talk about presentations, because I haven't done that yet on this podcast. I think it's so important, especially like you said, you know, now we're in the world of Zoom. I actually did a blog post a little while ago about, I have a whole chapter in my book about body language, and body language takes place when you're in front of somebody. Well, now you're not. Now you've got the, you know, the torso up to the head. So I did a post about the body language in the world of Zoom, what to watch for in the face and the shoulders and the hands and stuff, because you can't see the feet and the legs, which are actually the most accurate form of body language to read. So what you're saying from a presentation standpoint is immensely important, because everyone's doing that. And all the salespeople are making their presentations via Zoom. So yeah, I want to dive into this and talk about it, because I think it's just something that people kind of, it's like proposals. It's like presentations and proposal, people like kind of gloss over, and they could be the difference between you getting the sale and or not, you know?
Absolutely. I think, you know, there's a big phrase at the moment that's out there called Zoom and gloom, where people are so fed up with, you know, the way that people present on Zoom, or having the endless calls on Zoom, or whichever, you know, other video networks are available. So every time we let them say it, we're advertising it, aren't we?
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, it's a video connecting tool. That's what it is. Just like you don't have a Dyson, you have a vacuum cleaner.
Right.
Yeah. So when we start to think about presenting, presentations and proposals tend to go in hand in hand. And when I train people to put proposals together, I always say to them, you know, remember that a proposal is you on paper or you on screen.
Right.
So it has to have your voice. And the number of times that you see companies putting together a deck which contains God only knows how many slides. I mean, they expect you to put through. And a lot of the time, when you find out why historically they have always used so many slides, it's because the founders of the business believe that they have to put everything in there. So when you trace it back, it's down to the founder of the business. And often when I'm coaching people, they'll say, oh, our founder or our managing director wants all this information in there. And it's like, well, did you actually ask them why? Because you're the one who's having the relationship with the client. You know what the client wants.
Right.
The CEO or the founder is just telling you that that should go in. But if it has no value, then it will satisfy the CEO. But to the client, you could just lose them, because it fits in with what we in sales call the turn up and throw up routine.
Right.
So you just end up reading to people off a slide, which is so dull.
Right.
So, you know, and that's one of the reasons why when it comes to presenting, I don't use PowerPoint. I loathe every fiber of my being, that platform. It's so dull. And the irony, of course, is that when you ask people about PowerPoint, they'll say, oh, it's really, really boring. And if they go to a presentation that's internal or what have you, they go, oh, we had to sit through any number of PowerPoint slides and we were read to. And it's like, yeah, you had a bedtime story. Great. And what are you doing today? And they'll go, oh, I've got to present to a client. I've got to go and write a presentation. Oh, really? How are you doing that? I've got to put PowerPoint together. What? You absolute knob. Really? Really? So you don't like it, you're bored by it, but you think everyone else isn't. That's not how it's going to go. It's not how it's going to go. So I think when people put a presentation together in whatever format you do, there has to be some rules that we have. And the first set of rules that we have to understand is that any presentation that you put together has to have an aim. There must be a point to what you're doing in some way. It's a bit like just aiming an arrow at a bullseye. There must be a reason. And the reason or the aim of any presentation will fit into one of four categories. So you can have a presentation that's purely there to inform or to educate or to persuade or to change opinion. So if you have a presentation, ask yourself, what are you doing? Are you informing, educating, persuading, or changing opinion? That's not hard. Hmm. So if we're in sales, it's pretty obvious that it's about persuading. If it's an information-based proposal presentation where we're just giving people a piece of information, then that could be like the results of a marketing campaign. We're just standing here, and what we're doing is we're just giving you the results. We can't change it. We can't influence it. It's a need to know. So we're informing you. If it's education, then it's like training. We're teaching you a new thing or a new skill. If it's persuading, it's sales. And if it's to change opinion, then it's about looking at people who are doing things one way and we need to move them to do it a different way. And that, I suppose, in the current climate as well, in the political sphere, that's quite powerful right now with everything that's going on in elections. So there, anything there is done to change your opinion. And when we think about how we then put those together, each of those contains certain elements. So if you use an information-based presentation, then that will contain facts, insight, and proof, because it's information and it's going to be true. So facts, information, and proof usually are the building blocks of an information-based presentation.
Okay.
Education-based presentations, such as training, use models, examples, and theory. So we've got, that's kind of where you hear people say that sometimes training courses can feel a bit academic because they've used too much theory. They've tipped the balance too much.
Sure.
So it's a balance between those three things. If you're going to persuade someone, then we go back to sales 101. Benefits, value, and influence. Those are the things that we use to create a persuasion-based presentation. And then if we're going to change opinion in somebody, we want to move them to a different way of doing something, then we use argument, challenge, and supposition, because we want to create a debate. So right. Therefore, we have these four types of presentation and their individual building blocks. Now, those building blocks are not exclusive to those particular types. They can cross over. So for example, in an information-based presentation, you might use a little bit of argument as to how you got to that kind of way of doing things. If you want to change someone's opinion, you might bring in a few facts or examples. Right. So they do cross over, but they do have their kind of skeleton. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so that's
of course.
What we look at there. And then when we start to think about putting the sales presentation together, it should always fall into the oldest technique in the book, really, which is the three tells. And that being, of course, tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you just told them.
Right.
And that's the structure we use. So we often see people kind of falling into a bit of a trap when they start a presentation, because when they initially kick off, they worry about the first 5 minutes because it's usually the bit that gives you the most nerves. And once you're into your flow, you tend to, it goes okay. But the first 5 minutes are usually the hardest. So if we can always start by telling people what we're going to talk about, and let's just say you've got a presentation which is going to talk about what we know about you as a client, how we can help you, and what the realized benefits and investment are going to be from you, then you know what I'm going to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to tell you about those three things in detail. And at the end of it, I'm going to say, so this presentation has looked at a recap of the things that we know about you and that now you know about us as well, how we can actually help you, and then the things that you're going to need in terms of investment to see that return. So immediately, you're saying the same thing three times, but you're just saying it in a different way.
Right.
And funnily enough, psychology tells us that people often need to hear things three times in order for them to go in.
The magic number three.
The magic number three. Well, in my case, it's a magic number seven because of my business, Serial Trainer 7. But it's always those three things. So when we start to think about our you know, presenting on Zoom or presenting on a video channel, I should say, then what we have to do is sit there and just ask ourselves, what's the outcome of this? Right, I'm persuading. I need value, benefits, and I need some form of influence tool that I can use to move it along. I also need the next steps. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to break it into three chunks, tell them, and then I'm going to summarize. And then what I'm going to do at the end is I'm going to put a decisive closing mechanism on there, which is basically like a test close. So how does that sound to you? What do you see as the next steps being?
Right.
And then you can then move from there. Of course, right at the beginning, we have to make sure we tell the client or whoever we're presenting to how long something is going to last, because you don't want to start a presentation and think,
right. Oh, absolutely.
I could be here for an hour. And I'm, you know, when your feet start to turn to salt, and as you quite rightly said, it is important to watch people's feet, isn't it? Because if you see their feet moving, you know they need to wheel, they need to get the hell out.
Yeah.
So give them a break. But honestly, because you can't see that, right. You have to manage the expectation much quicker.
Yeah,
so thank you for talking to me today. We're probably going to be talking for about the next 20 minutes or so, and during that time I will cover 1, 2, 3, 4. Tell them what you're going to tell them. You should also at the beginning explain when you expect interaction from the people you're presenting to. Is it going to be a very discussion based thing where it's to and fro? If so, tell them.
Yep.
If you want to control the audience a lot more, just say to them, respectfully, I'm going to ask you to keep your questions, comments, and feedback until the end. And that way, you'll probably find that I answer most of them as I go through the presentation. So if we can do that, that would be time. Notice that I have said questions, comments, and feedback. At the end of a presentation, one of the biggest dreads from the audience perspective is the moment when the presenter says, and does anyone have any questions? And everyone in the audience goes, shit. Don't look at me. I'm busy. In my bag. So
nothing to see here. Wait, no, I'm looking at him. I just got a text. I have to read this. Yeah. Nobody wants to start the social proof.
That's it. And the funny thing is, I go to a lot of author readings, or I used to before COVID, and you go into these things and you watch the author do a thing on their new novel, and they always do the same thing. They do a bit of background, then they read to you from it, which drives me nuts because I don't like being read to. And then it goes back again, doesn't it? Yeah, tell me a bedtime story. And then at the end they do, and does anyone have any questions? And it's always the same bullshit conversation questions you get back, like, how'd you come up with the idea for your characters?
Right.
Or if someone was to play your character in a film, who would that be? And every time you go, you think, oh, come on, give me a break. You know, seriously, is that the best they can do? You know, they think they're clever and smart when they ask it. And you know that the author sat there going, seriously? Anyway, so we get all of that. So I always say to people, when you stop a presentation at the end of it, just say, and at this point, I'd love to welcome your feedback, comments, or any questions that you might have, in any order. Because what you're then eliciting by saying comments and feedback is you're getting people to initially give you a knee-jerk reaction. So you could get someone who sat there immediately after you say that going, yeah, it's very good. And you just pick on them and you say, I see you nodding. You said it's very good. Which bit did you like the best?
Mm-hmm.
Which bit stuck out for you? Oh, I actually quite liked it when you told me that you get your ideas from the fact that you've killed many people yourself. And that's oh, that's marvelous, backing away very slowly. You know, all of those things. So, you know, you want to try and create engagement from people, but asking people just for questions is a surefire way to put a barrier up. And like you say, immediately they're going to reach for their phone or for something interesting in the bottom of their handbag. So we don't want that. So when we start to think about presenting and doing it a lot quicker, we want to make sure that we've got those aims in place and we've got that structure. Now, when it comes to tips on presenting, two things always stand out in my mind. Number one is rehearsal. You should always try to rehearse whatever you can. And the way that I used to do it years ago when I worked in media, I used to rehearse my presentations by taking magazine covers with people's faces on it. And I used to put them on a set of chairs. And I would present to those people, because the faces that we're looking at from the covers helped you to initiate eye contact. mm-hmm. hold eye contact for the magical 1.5 to 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. So you could get used to doing that, and you were used to being seen, albeit by a paper face.
What a great point.
And if you've got a lot of magazines, you can use, I don't know, nick your kids' teddy bears or dollies or whatever and talk to them. It'll make you look a bit of a freak, but hey, you're just practicing your presentation. So when you start to rehearse, the first time you do a rehearsal, you will change it straight away. Immediately, you'll change it. And if you rehearse it by being videoed and you watch yourself, you'll probably give yourself too much of a hard time because you'll think, I sounded unsure. I said the magic words, too many times. Mm-hmm. Do you know what? I don't care if somebody says, I really don't, because it's the natural part of presenting is to get nervous. Uh-huh. Years ago, there was that whole thing where they said people would prefer to die than speak in public because they don't want to, you know, look a fool. And I think it's very human if someone trips over their words or they say occasionally or they lose their train of thought. As long as they acknowledge to the audience that's what they're doing, an audience is going to be very forgiving. I mean, after all, Alan, you know, they're going to prefer that you're up there than they're up there.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you've got a complete git in the audience. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, don't worry about it. And I think nowadays is where we talk about authenticity and empathy a lot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, being yourself is important. And I was asked the other day when I was doing a podcast with someone why I don't use a background mm-hmm. behind. And I said, well, to be honest with you, I'd rather, you know, you saw what I want you to see, which is that. But I said, let me ask you the question. Has the background behind me in any way deterred from the value of the information I've given you?
Right.
And they said, no. And I said, I rest my case.
Right.
You know, background doesn't make you, you know, especially when you've got those hideous ones that maybe look like you're on a beach where it's all breaking up around your ears.
Right. Or it's distracting. I think a lot of the virtual backgrounds now are so distracting. You got to be careful. So.
Really have. And you know what you've got behind you looks great because you did that yourself with all the.
I did all that myself. That's not virtual. That's just, you know, and I wanted it to look natural and nice, and that's it. That's where I live, and boom.
Yeah, it looks really good. It's really nice.
So let me stop you for a second because I just like 16 questions popped in my head as you're going through all this amazing information. One of the things, so you mentioned about the sales presentation, which we're going to obviously focus on that part of it. Although I like, you know, the four presentations that you're given. And you mentioned persuasion. And I'm not sure if you ever read the book by Carmine Gallo called Talk Like Ted. You ever read that book?
I have that in there.
Okay. I loved in that book that he talked about ethos, pathos, and logos, about emotion, statistics, and authority. Because when I am with a sales rep, I'm on retainer for some companies where I ride along with their sales reps and I just see how they're doing. And so many reps spend way too much time on the logos, statistics part of, or the features part of their presentation, rather than the emotion part. Everybody forgets about emotion, and sales is about emotion. And in Carmine Gallo's book, he said that the best TED Talks of all time, he broke this down, had a 60% or higher score for emotion. 60% of their talk was directed at the emotion of the audience rather than, well, these are the features of what I'm talking about. This is the authority. The company's been around for 35 years. My grandpa, Joe, started the company. The color of the building's green. All that stuff that a lot of reps spent all that time on because, like you said, the owner wants them to talk about that stuff, where it's, let's talk about the emotion. What is it going to feel like after you own this product or service? What's it going to feel like when you're sitting there looking out your new sunroom, having a cup of coffee on a fall day? That's the emotion part of sales. And talk about how important that is in a presentation.
It is very important. And when you start to think about the big names who are great presenters out there, so the Simon Sinek's of this world, mm-hmm. you know, when he's talking about finding your why and he's storytelling, it's completely relatable. It's the emotional relationship you have. And people watch it going, oh yeah, that happens to me too. Mm-hmm. And it's that connection that you want. When you watch Patty McCord do her 8 principles of management culture after she left Netflix. And she starts the whole thing going, I always wanted to speak the language of HR, but HR jargon is just terrible and all these things. And then all the people immediately within the first 2 seconds are with her because right. that's an emotional connection.
Right.
So when we start to see these people put emotion into things, it's going to count for so much. And I think it's why, Alan, storytelling is so important in any form of presentation, especially sales, because storytelling is a really good way for the non-emotional person to engage their emotional side. Because exactly. if you're not very emotional, if you are one of these people that's consumed with the facts and the statistics, then make a story part of that countdown set of things that you have to do, mm-hmm. and then step into that story so that then it's ticked off in your analytical brain, but the audience has received it on an emotional level, especially if you can frame it by saying, I want to tell you a story about right. what happened with me. What will happen is people's brains will click in a different way.
And especially, I did a LinkedIn video on this, especially if you can frame the context of your product in a story. Like, tell a story about your product or a story about one of your customers who is using your product. You know, I use the example of, let's say you sell fences and you go in and you, okay, here's my fence. It's 8 feet tall. It comes in three different heights and comes in wood and plastic and three different colors. And it's $12 a linear foot. There you go. That's the typical sales rep.
Yeah.
Or you go in and say, here's my fence. But you know what? This fence right here, you have a little puppy, you know, that you want to let out in the backyard. We had a fence that actually kept a Rottweiler out of a backyard once trying to get through this fence, and the Rottweiler couldn't get to that customer's puppy. That's a really strong fence. Well, who are you going to buy the fence from? Exactly. You're going to buy the fence from the person who told the story about the Rottweiler who couldn't break through the fence. That's what I mean by using the context of a story in your product.
It makes such a difference. It's that there's the old, it's like the old sales training thing that we do where someone tries, I read it the other day in the Exclusive Sales Millionaires Club, the Extremely Successful Salesman's Club.
Oh, okay.
I read it years ago and it's been redone with a new cover, and they talk about how to sell a spade, and they talk about, oh, you know, it's got all these great things. And then someone comes up and says, no, you don't sell the spade, you sell the hole.
Yeah.
That's what they're selling, is the hole. So exactly. In your analogy, you're not selling the fence, you're selling keeping the Rottweiler out.
Exactly.
That's
right.
What you're selling. Right. So when you start to put it together as a story that way, it's going to come across in a much better way. And of course, the smart salesperson is going to use customer stories of their experience of that salesperson.
Right.
Within their presentation too. And of course, those are the testimonials.
Right.
Now, testimonials are the ultimate storytelling machine when it comes to social proof, but they're also a very, very powerful way of saying, do you know what? I don't need to tell you a story. I can let my customers speak for me, and they'll tell you the story of how we've worked together and what we've done and the results. And if you can curate really great testimonials that are aligned with the client that you're speaking to, then as such, that's going to play a big part in that presentation. There's a really big mistake that's often made by companies who are in an SME space, and they get really big clients, and then that really big client then gives them a testimonial, but they use that really big client's testimonial to sell to people who are much smaller.
Right.
And it often backfires because it is a huge mistake because they don't see themselves that way. It's a bit like when I sold advertising, you know, we were taught in the early days, talk to them about how Coca-Cola advertise and how McDonald's advertise. And a few of us would sit back and go, but I'm dealing with a small local business. Why am I talking to a small local business about a multi-billion-dollar business? They don't want to know that. Well, they want to know about Joe Bloggs along the road who's done stuff and what's worked for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what we want.
It's such an important thing, and so many people forget that. Like, they'll use a testimonial, like you'll be talking to someone in, you know, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You're talking about, you're giving them a testimonial from some guy in Topeka, Kansas. It doesn't relate. You got to give them the testimonial about someone else in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It's social proof and storytelling, and all of that put together makes you a very powerful presenter and a powerful persuader in sales. 100%.
Certainly does. My other tip that I've got for people as well that often gets overlooked is born of when people are asked questions as a presenter. And when I ask people what they fear the most about having to do a presentation, they'll often say, it's when I'm asked questions. And they always want to know how to deal with difficult questions, all of those things. And I actually say to them, it's not the difficult questions that are the problem. It's the fact that you didn't prepare for the difficult questions. So what I tend to do is to say to people on courses, whenever you put a presentation together, for every point that you wish to raise on your presentation, always write down as many questions as you can that you think someone would ask you about that point, from the very simple to the very complex. Why? Because you've got time to do it. And if you can't think of any, tell somebody you know what you're going to say and say, what question would that conjure up in your mind? What would be the most difficult question or the first question that comes to your mind? Then write it down, then research it, answer it and write that down too. Because what you're actually creating is your own get out of jail free card. It's an FAQ, a frequently asked question. Mm-hmm. Now, where it becomes quite magical is when you're in person with someone presenting, you take that along with you so that you say at the beginning, I'm going to invite you for your thoughts, comments, feedback and questions at the end. And if there isn't time for all of them, I've done an FAQ document here of the most commonly asked questions on this subject for you to take away. One, takes the pressure off the audience from asking a question. And two, everyone loves a freebie. They love a handout. So they get a little something to take away. Of course, you've got to make sure it's branded with you.
Right.
So you do that and that's nice. But here's the thing. You know, when you see presenters who are asked a question and they'll say, that's a really good question. Or they say, I'm really glad you asked that question. Sometimes they're doing it because they're buying themselves a little bit of time by saying that.
Right.
So they can think on their feet. But if you've done an FAQ, there is a bit of a probability happening that you have thought of the question that's just been asked you by that audience member, that if you hadn't have done your preparation, you'd have been stuffed. But you can genuinely say, I'm really glad you asked that question. And in fact, it's on my FAQ. You get this bit where you think, actually, it really pays off, because it's the difference between it's the difference between knowing your shit and knowing your shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, make sure you know your stuff. That's the point of this, isn't it?
Right.
So you don't have to know it all off the top of your head. And of course, the classic thing is, if you don't know the answer to a question, say, I don't know. I'm afraid I don't have that answer right now, but let me take your details and I will come back to you with the answer. Of course. But you can prevent that by doing the FAQ.
Right.
And if you prevent it, then that's great, because you come across more fluid and a little bit better if you're actually just practicing this. It's labor intensive to do it as part of your preparation, but by goodness, does it pay off.
Wow, that's brilliant. To take a UK term, that's brilliant. Doesn't sound as good as when I say it. I want to go back to what you said in the beginning, and maybe I'll challenge you a little bit, maybe not. This is maybe just my opinion. I agree with you 100% that the term, oh my God, it's a PowerPoint presentation. I feel bad for PowerPoint because the platform is amazing. It's just used so poorly. It's like, I'm going to make a Xerox. No, you're going to make a copy. It's just, that's the machine you're using. So the machine is PowerPoint, and 99% of people use PowerPoint incorrectly. I think that slides can be helpful if they're used properly, where you put up a word or two on the slide or some sort of graphic and then talk from there, sort of like to have that kind of graphic component, the picture component that the human brain likes to see. And there's a software that I use called Beautiful Slides. And have you ever heard of this software? What they force you to keep a small amount of things on the screen. That's why I love it. You can't, like, PowerPoint, you can put as much crap on the slide as you can. Here, they're like, this is the template. You have to stay within that template, and it forces you to have a clear, crisp presentation that you can talk from. So would you agree that you using slides can be helpful if they're used the right way?
I'm going to answer that in two ways.
Okay.
One, if that's what you want it to do, as long as that doesn't become the presentation.
Right. That's my point.
You are the presentation.
Right.
And secondly, I always ask myself, do you really need that crutch?
Mm-hmm.
Do you really need it? Can you not be compelling enough that you need that? You know, there are so many different tools out there that you can use. I've seen, you know, let's not just diss PowerPoint, there's Keynote, which has also been abused.
Yeah.
But I saw one called Haiku Deck, which was really rather marvelous, because what it did was, it, like yours, it kept you very brief, like a haiku. It was a haiku poem. It was based on the fact you could only put four lines of text on it, and you spoke as if you were sending an old-fashioned postcard.
Oh, you know,
you'd write a postcard to someone and go, arrived yesterday, weather's terrible, food's even worse, can't wait to get home, wish you were here. And that's it. And maybe an image. And so that's kind of nice and short. So Haiku Deck is that. But the other one that's also, you know, really taken off is Prezi. And Prezi has really... Have you seen Prezi?
I have not. I've heard of it, but I haven't looked at it.
Yeah. It's worth having a look at Prezi. If you have to do a presentation, then maybe Prezi is something that's it's very memorable. Because if you think about a presentation, it should be unique, memorable, and have personality.
Mm-hmm.
So all those things should come from you. But if you need to have something where you want to have something that moves and something that looks rather elegant, then actually Prezi is that tool. And what it does is it's based on magnification and it's based on the flow of a river. So it's not a slide, it's a piece of information moving in and out. Now, if you use it on a really big screen, people in the audience can get motion sickness. So it does have that down. It really does. In a small space with a group of people or on Zoom, it actually works very well. It's very elegant and zooms in. And I've got a presentation where to illustrate a point using Prezi, I say when you're presenting to people, there is someone in the audience who is always watching you. Always. It doesn't matter whether it's 10 or 1,000 people, there will always be somebody that's watching you. And that comes from stage work. When you go on stage and you do stuff, whatever you do, the people will always say to you, even if you're in the chorus or you're at the lead, someone will be watching you from somewhere. So make sure you're on point. Mm-hmm. And to illustrate that point, I showed a picture of a local town hall with a group of old age pensioners all having a talk on flower arranging. And the camera spanned the image round and it zoomed in on one old lady and it zoomed right in to her eye. And in the center of her eye was your face.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome.
It. And that was very memorable because it was one of only two images that I used in the presentation. And one of them was about the FAQ. But this just made people realize that when you're on stage, and it goes back to what you talk about in body language, you have to be conscious of what you're doing with your body. Mm-hmm. You've got to be conscious of doing of what you're doing with your hands, whether you're touching your face, whether you're scratching yourself or mm-hmm. whatever you're doing. You've got to be aware of that. And so, you know, all of those things are encapsulated in that one little slide, but it really made a difference. It really landed.
I'd love to see that. That's pretty awesome. I'm going to check out Prezi when we're done. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, works very well. But you can do an awful lot. There's a free license that you can do, but everything will stay in the public domain. So people watching this, if you use Prezi, you can use a free license, but everything stays in the public domain. So it's good to play on and get ideas from other people. And they've got some great examples. They've also do one called Prezi Next and Prezi Classic. So the classic one is very basic, but very good. And then Prezi Next is a little more sophisticated. There, it's not that expensive. I think it's like $72. It sounds like I'm selling it. I'm not. It's just a very good product.
Okay.
So if you have to use something.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, we are already at 50 something minutes as the time has flown by.
You didn't chat, Alan. Honestly, you just don't shut up, do you? I barely said anything. I don't know why you invited me, really.
I really don't understand why. I just, I had to carry this whole show. I don't know, you know, it's the last time you're ever going to be on my show. Well, it is time, Simon, for the question of the week, the Ask Alan segment of the podcast.
Yeah.
Got a question. I love this. I love how the world is just at our feet right now. So Courtney from Dublin, Ireland writes in. So someone from Dublin has listened to the podcast, liked it so much, she wrote a question. Courtney writes, my company always tells me to follow a scripted, what did she write? Oh, follow a script and I will sell. So this is going back to what we talked about your presentation, follow the script. But I feel like an ass doing that. I love that she wrote that. What can I do about this? That's her question.
Okay, the easy answer is don't do it.
What's that?
The easy answer is don't do it.
Just
don't do it. And
I think scripts are very pedestrian because what a script will do is it just holds your hand all the way through it. And if the world needed sales scripts as much as this company claims it does for this lady, then ultimately that salesperson doesn't need to be there because you can just automate everything and you become a robot. Mm-hmm. And nobody likes listening to a script. They know when you're using a script, it immediately turns them off. So, you know, it's just corporate BS, really. It's a bit like someone that says, oh, we'll do this for you as a gesture of goodwill, or we apologize for any inconvenience. No, you don't. You're doing it because you're bloody sorry. So say sorry. You know, that's what it is. Be honest about it. When you're given, you know, when we train people who've never sold before, we give them guidelines of the things they can say. So things that will influence a call and get people to talk to you. So we might say, hello, my name is Simon. I'm calling you from Serial Trainer 7. And I wanted to talk to you today about your sales training because we've worked with other companies like yours and they have seen some great results. And I wanted to take a few minutes of your time just to find out how we can help your business make more money with effective sales training. Now, that sounds like a really nice intro, but it also sounds slightly scripted. Mm-hmm. But if you just make the words your own, you can use the same framework. You just have to make it your own. And whenever, you know, I've worked in environments where a script has been recommended, you know, I just look at it and just think, well, I can say that in my own way. Those right. are your words. Those are not my words. And you don't come across as very authentic. So I would probably to say to her, look at what's being you're being asked to say, and then take that script, go home with it, and circle all of the sentences or words that you think have the most impact on the conversation. And then bring in your own words, just making sure that you say those words on that piece of paper that you've circled or thereabouts in your conversation. You're kind of meeting your employer halfway, and they might be playing devil's advocate. They might be telling you to say that because in that environment, that's the right thing to say. And in some environments, you have to talk the lingo of the environment you work in. So
of course,
if you're working
right.
in a software environment, you can't just make up any words and call it, you know, if you're working in IT, you can't turn around and say, oh, you've got a bit of a problem with your typewriter and your television is not picking up the words because the ink isn't going on there. And when you've tried using correction fluid, it just marks the screen. You've got to use the right language.
You're probably not making that sale.
Yeah. So it's about making the words your own. But whenever you get a script, look at the script, look at what you think are the words that pop most for the client, and then incorporate those words into a natural conversation in the same way as you would adapt a conversation for different personalities.
Exactly.
You know, I might talk to you differently to how I talk to my best friend or how I talk to my, you know, my grandparents or something like that. So you just have a different way, but you should be adaptive in the way that you talk to clients. It's not a one size fits all, that's for sure.
No. And I've always said, you're going to have a sales process. You're going to obviously train on your product, and you're going to, like you said, come up with these scripted sentences to introduce the product and talk about how this works and that works. But the companies that allow you to become yourself within that process are the ones that are much more successful than the companies that say, you just got to follow this. I remember as a young sales rep, I even have this on my book. We had these once a month sales meetings. There's like 200 of us there. It was like East Coast sales. It was crazy. And they brought in this big wig, for this big wig sales trainer from Atlanta. And he came in and he was mad because the collective closing percentage of all 200 of us was like 23% because the sales training was so bad. So instead of coming in and giving us some useful information, he basically screamed at us for an hour. And he said this sentence that I'll never forget. He said, it is your duty, it's your responsibility to this company to say the exact same sales pitch to every customer you see every single time. And then he said, word for word, do not change it. And if you do that, you will sell. And I was like 26 years old. And I was like, that doesn't sound like it's going to work. I even knew back, everyone else was like writing stuff down. I'm like, that's terrible. Like, I'm going to be talking to an amiable personality on Monday and then an analytical on Tuesday who has different houses and different income levels and different experiences in their lives. And I'm going to say the same exact presentation.
Wow. So, he sounds yeah. like Alec Baldwin.
It was. It was very similar to
and these are the leads in human.
Coffee there, is for closers.
Yeah.
So what I would say to Courtney and what you said is they're going to have the process, but two things. If the company allows you to turn that process into Courtney to have your own personality behind it, great. If they're not, if they say do what this guy that I dealt with 30 years ago, I'll probably find another company. You want to find another company that lets you be yourself in selling, because not only will you be more successful, you'll like yourself more and you'll enjoy your job more.
I agree completely. That said, I'm going to just bring another point of view on this.
Okay.
That said, there are certain things that we can do with clients, such as objection handling techniques and closing techniques, which are tried and tested in mm-hmm. the way that we frame them and approach them. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about the different types of close, you know, we would say you might want to test close them there. all right, what do I do with the test scores? Just say, how does that sound to you? Does that make sense?
Right.
If you're good, you've got the business, now go for the direct close. What's that? Shall we go ahead and book that in? Mm-hmm. If you work in a project-based environment, and this is what I train people to do when they work on projects. So if it's in the SaaS market, where it's the installation of software, or even if it's when I work with a luxury bathroom company and how they do the installation of a new bathroom, mm-hmm. I use what I call the time travel close. And the time travel close is really simple. You just say, so when did you say you wanted your bathroom fitted? And they'll say, we want it in by Christmas. You say, right, so we want it in by Christmas. At the moment, our installers have got 4 slots remaining around the 16th of December. Now, in order for you to get one of your slots and for your bathroom to be in by Christmas, you are going to need to understand that prior to the installation, we need to make sure that all your stock is delivered and available and ready to be installed. That's a week before. Prior to that, we need to do a home visit to make sure your floors are straight and your walls are straight, just to make sure everything's right. The week before that, we do an electrical and plumbing check to make sure everything's right there. Prior to that, you have to sign off on the design and we have to order all of the materials for your bathroom. And right now, we're at that stage prior to that where you're going to need to give us your deposit within the next 48 hours if we are to fulfill the 16th of December slot for Christmas. And what you're doing is you're walking the client through the stages so that they become transparent to your process. Mm-hmm. If you turn that into a closing process for someone who's having a new piece of HR software put in or a new CRM put in that needs to be tested, uploaded, checked. If you've got somebody that's going to, I don't know, buy a new fleet of cars and they need to test them, they've got to be ordered, all of those things. This time travel close is quite good. But to Courtney's point, you know, that sounds like a script, but it's actually a technique. Mm-hmm. And knowing the difference between a script and a technique could be a very, very fine line, but it's what works for you.
Right. And that's a great way to do that. I like that you went backward instead of forward. A lot of reps will go with the forward way. We'll say, okay, this is how we're going to start. This is what's coming next. But backing them into the decision, if you want this date, you're backed in. We need your deposit within 48 hours. I love that. That's really good. See, I even learned something today.
Yeah, I do that when I sell training. So I always find out the really important questions to ask in discovery are always going to be when, because you'll get a date. How gives you process, and why gives you rationale or reason. And I always make sure I've got those three. The when is really important because, you know, I have a 6-month wait list on, you know, for people wanting training from Serial Trainer 7. And the first question is, when are you actually thinking of doing this? Mm-hmm. Because we have that and I need to manage your expectations back. So, you know, it plays a role.
So it was, what was the three? When, what was the other two?
When, which gives you time.
Yeah.
And a time scale. How will always give you process.
Got it.
And why always gives you a belief. So if you think about the conversation in real terms, if I ask you a question why, you will probably answer it with the word because. And when somebody uses that conversation mechanic, if I say because, it's because I mean it and I know it to be true. Mm-hmm. So God help you if you contradict me. Mm-hmm. So in media, for example, someone might say, why did you choose to advertise with the competition? And they say, well, because they told us they were the market leader. The salesperson stupidly goes, do you know what? They're not quite right because we're the market leader and we've got the data to back it up. Mm. You've just contradicted that client and you've also made them realize that all salespeople are liars because they're going to realize that, well, that person's just lied to me. So how are you any different?
Yeah.
And the fact is, what you should have done was said, that's really interesting. That's fantastic. So what did you like about that publication? Support their decision that they bought advertising. They liked buying advertising. So right. They'll like buying advertising from you. It's not bloody hard, is it? So why gives you, and you try it with anyone, ask them a why question, work out if they answer because, they probably mean it. If you ask anyone how do I make a loaf of bread? How do I make a pumpkin jack-o'-lantern? How do I do that? You will get a process. How do you envisage your bathroom looking when it's fitted? How do you envisage your marketing campaign working? Mm-hmm. They'll tell you a process. So we like that.
Yeah.
Of course, the when, we have to know when they want it. Of course, somewhere you're going to ask them about their money as well. Because if they haven't got enough money to do it, you need to get away from them really quickly. But they've got to be qualified to work with you, because otherwise you could end up spending a lot of time on someone who genuinely, you know, thinks that what you offer is very, very cheap and really affordable. And it might be that you work at the top end of the market.
Right. I was just doing some training with someone who kept asking me, they had this client and she was sharing the emails with me, and the client kept asking for a discount and can you cut this down and can you do, instead of this whole process, can you do half the process? And she was asking me what she should do. And I'm like, you stick to your guns. You don't cut anything. In fact, you know, this guy right away sounds like a nightmare client. He's a nightmare client before he's a client. So you probably want to, people make the mistake all the time of just dropping their price just to get the order. You can't do that. Because it's just going to bite you in the butt in the long run.
I work with a lot of personal trainers, and they often forget, bless them, that the clients who are buying personal training can afford it. It's mm-hmm. a luxury, and they forget they're in a luxury environment. So what they do is they discount to get more sessions. And it's, you know, don't discount because the people can afford it. If you're going to give them something, give them an extra lesson right. if they prepay. So get something in return. They're going to commit. Right. So think about that. I had a client recently who said that my costs were further away than what he wanted to pay. And I said to him, okay, well, those are the costs. That's what we do. And part of his brief to me was to explain that he wanted his sales team to hold their margins and to not discount. So when he said to me, I need you to come in a little bit cheaper, I said, hang on a minute. So you're saying to me that you want me to discount my rates so that I can come and train your staff not to. How does that make me look? No, it doesn't work that way. You know, well, and then they followed on and said, well, actually, if you could come down by about 25%. And it's like, well, right, okay. So my immediate answer is, in which 25% of the training are you going to deliver? Because if you're going to deliver it, why do you need me? I mean, they just don't. But it's funny because when you have confidence in your product and you've got testimonials to back it up and you've got a business to back it up, you know, you're not doing yourself any favors by discounting, because you know that if you work in a sector, all of your clients talk to each other when they meet the trade shows, and right. who are they talking about? Their suppliers. So they might turn around and say, oh, are you using that trainer? Because we use them as well. And they went, yeah, did us a great deal. And then the other one goes, they did.
Oh, really? I didn't get a deal.
Oh, I didn't get a deal. And then suddenly they come back and ask for a refund. You absolutely shoot yourself in the foot every time you do it.
Every time you do it, yeah.
Because if you discount too much, you're going to end up doing 10 times the work for half the money.
Yes. What's that set? You spend 80% of your time on 20% of your clients or something like that? Yeah.
Well, it would be that 80% of your revenue comes from 20% of your clients. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So there we are.
All right, sir. We are way over time, but this has been awesome. We can talk for another 2 hours, but I really thank you for your incredible advice and your insight and everything. This has been fun. Tell everyone where they can find Mr. Simon Hares, and you know, I know you're 6 months out, but definitely worth saying hello on LinkedIn, and he actually does respond to people, so yeah, you can say hello.
I use video as well to respond to people, so we like that.
He does. I can account for that. Yep. So how can they find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn, Simon Hares, Hares. You can find the business page, which is Serial Trainer 7, number 7, Limited, on LinkedIn as well, and serialtrainer7.com is my website. So you can reach me on any of those. Well, I give away a lot of information on there to give people support and help, especially at this time when people need it the most, because God knows we need salespeople in our business right now to keep those revenue streams coming in.
And we need more salespeople like you. So Simon Hares, thanks for joining me. And everyone out there, thanks for listening in to episode number 27 of Marketing and Sales Over Cocktails. This is Alan Langer, your host. Remember to send in the question of the week to marketingandsalespodcast.com. And if we read your question, you will get a free autographed copy of my book sent to you directly. So thanks again for joining, and we will see everyone next time.
See you soon.